So as always, reading these texts, we have to be aware of their historical context. This is especially true for the reading today. I mean, there is no question whether within the body of the Bible there is a real development, a real theological change that takes place, an evolution. Above all, in the most fundamental way, of their vision of God. I mean, you get over and over in many places in the Hebrew Bible, this vision of this punitive God, this God who is ready to beat somebody on the side of the head at the drop of a hat, an angry God. But you find, even within the text of the Hebrew Bible, radical change. Read the prophet Hosea. Read the book of Job. Read Jeremiah. You see that the God that we know is the God that they talk about, is the God of Jesus. God who's not primary response is not anger and vindictiveness, judgment, but mercy, forgiveness, kindness. We are very slow to lose this. I think a lot of us still go around in the back of our head with the really angry God ready to pounce at every possible misstep. Well, we just have to look to the figure of Jesus to see how wrong-headed that was. And Jesus was just another stage in the development of Jewish thought about who God was. And this business of historical consciousness is also vital to understand this text from Luke and comparable texts in all of the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And here history is absolutely crucial. The Jews, those who believe in the resurrection of the body, and not all the Jews did at the time of Jesus, believed at the same time that when somebody was raised, bodily raised from the dead, that is a for sure sign that God is going to ring down the curtain on the whole human enterprise. This is the end, folks. And that's exactly the expectation in which this early Jesus movement, this Jewish reform movement, we came to be called Christianity, thought. If you don't believe me, read Paul's first letter to the Thessalonians. Read Paul, read all of Paul. Paul to the day he died. His last letter, the letter to the Romans. Paul probably was killed around the mid-60s. Paul still believed that he'd be around when God sent Jesus back to judge the world. The point is that those guys lived in a state of radical expectancy. Intense awareness of the incompleteness of things, of the unfinishedness of things. In other words, just this dissonant consciousness of the way things are and the way things are supposed to be. Okay? Because they believed that God would send Jesus back and Jesus would bring in the kingdom. Finished. Well, this is why we have all these parables about being ready, be expectant. Remember the 10 virgins, you know, the ones who had the oil and the ones who didn't have the oil. Et cetera, et cetera. It pervades the whole New Testament, this sense of expectancy. It's now 2,000 years later, and it's very hard to sustain that kind of sense of anticipation. And we haven't done it very well, really. The status quo looks like it's permanently established for us. And we in the Roman Church have been particularly uneven in creating that sense of expectancy, because we wanted to say, well, we are what we're supposed to be. We are triumphant. It is the church. I may be a dirty rat, but the church is real. The church is finished. The church is what it's supposed to be. That's nonsense. It never is. And it took almost 2,000 years for an official declaration of that fact, as we find it in the Second Vatican Council. The church is semper reformanda. The church is always in need of reform. The church is never what it's supposed to be. Remember all these people who get their noses out of joint at hearing the criticism of the official church by a variety of sources, some even within the church, like the Pope, God love him, Francis, regularly calls us to mind the fact that we are not what we're supposed to be. Above all, the fact that that phrase is not entirely self-evident, what he was talking about. The church is self-referential. The church just looks to itself, looks at itself. And in doing so, ignores the world. I mean, I grew up in a church, and probably some of you did too, where there was the world here, and then there was the church, the bad guys and the good guys. Well, that's total nonsense. Again, one of the Greek novelties of the Second Vatican Council. For the first time in an official document, we were told that the church is to learn from the world. Why? Because, as the Hebrew Bible, the arm of the Lord is not foreshortened. God is operating every place. And so one badly needs to know, again, that wonderful phrase of John the 23rd, the signs of the times. We have to be historically aware. We have to perceive what is going on. Why is this so important? Because it points to an aspect of Christian life that I don't think we pay much attention to. The fact of the disparity between who we are and who we're supposed to be. It's very difficult to sustain that sense of incompleteness. And I can testify that the older you get, the more difficult it becomes. I mean, life, in the wonderful words of Fred Allen, one damn thing after another. You know, we go on, 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 nothing changes. Nothing new under the sun, as G.S. is for. But that's exactly what we're supposed to be called to. To be intensely aware of the discrepancy between who we are and who we're called to be. And not just who we are as individuals, but who we are as an institution. But even more so, I think, who we are as a species on this planet. We continue to ravage the planet. That's one of the dire things I saw in a recent magazine article. The planet is not dying, it's dead. The oceans are polluted. Multiple life forms disappearing every day. And they're not being replaced. Why? Because of human intervention. So that's just one place where we are not conscious enough that we are supposed to be, in that Greek Protestant phrase, the stewards of creation, the caretakers of God's world. And so acting, becoming co-creators with God. But it's not just there, it's every place. Last night, a friend and I watched the second version of that film, Wall Street. You remember Gordon Gekko, greed is good. Michael Douglas announcing that proudly. Well, greed is not good. As we had in the readings last Sunday, greed is destructive. Greed turns us into enemies of each other. Greed destroys the very possibility of human community, of human fellowship. But to carry that all the time, to every institution, to our examination of every institution, to our participation in every institution, that's very difficult to do. And again, as I said, officially the church has not abetted that process, that kind of consciousness, very well. But that's what's supposed to be going on. In other words, it is the letter to the Hebrew for the faith is a substance of things unseen, of things hoped for. That little tiny virtue between faith and charity that we pay so little attention to, right? Hope. If that's supposed to be the hallmark of our existence,